Representative Larson, Representative Schultz, Representative Cowdery, and myself, Representative Labuda, as chair. The first bill on the docket this morning will be and Representative Miller. He stepped into the vault for a minute to count his money. But he is in attendance. The first bill we'll hear this afternoon is House Bill 80, an act providing for the extension of the time for voting on Election Day under certain circumstances. It is customary, however, that the sponsor be allowed to give testimony first. However, with the presence of the Lieutenant Governor, I'm wondering whether or not the Representative Phillips would refer to the Lieutenant Governor.
Mr. Chairman, I would, since I can think of no earthly reason why this bill should be passed, I would defer to try to gain the rationale behind it. I would prefer to defer to Representative Phillips.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. We understand that, but we wanted to extend the courtesy.
Thank you.
Representative Phillips, would you like to come up, please, and give your testimony?
For the record, Representative Randy Phillips from House District 15. For those who are from the south central area of the state, we'll probably remember the power outage that we had during the night of the election. And as a result, particularly in my area, and I believe in Representative Larson's area, we didn't get our electricity back online until 12:30 the next morning. Lights went out about 20 after 4, particularly my constituents. A lot of work in Anchorage, and it takes about 2 hours under these circumstances to get back home, which we made it about 7 o'clock at night. So when we had the power outage, there was some confusion on the part of at least my constituents whether they should go ahead and vote at this particular polling places or not. And after the polls had closed and the following day, I made quite a few phone calls that something should be done about this. Therefore, I've introduced this bill to allow the Lieutenant Governor's Office for the Division of Elections to extend the polling hours under certain circumstances. I know and I understand the reasons why Lieutenant Governor's Office and Division Elections are reluctant to pursue or reluctant to accept the language I have right here before this committee. But I'm introducing the legislation to point out a problem. I do not have pride of authorship in this piece of legislation. I think something's got to be done in the event that we have a natural or man-made disaster, and to not disenfranchise the voters from voting. Meaning the bottom line is that, you know, a person has the right to vote, and sometimes they just can't get to the voting place due to circumstances that they can't control, cannot control. I can think of numerous other natural disasters that could happen on election night, and I think we ought to have some mechanism within our either state statutes or regulations taking care of these problems. And I'll just read my testimony to that.
Thank you, Representative Phillips. Is there any questions from the committee? Representative Cuddy.
You stated that, thank you, Mr. Chairman, that you thought that extending the voting time, is that past the 8 o'clock deadline, would be an appropriate solution? Is that what you think?
Well, In, from a practical point of view, I can understand here again why it would be very difficult for the division election to extend the hours, or because if you make one exception, you're going to make other exceptions. And I'm just going to go back to what I said earlier. There's no prior authorship here. All I'm doing, the only reason I introduced this bill is to point out the problem. I think, from my own point of view, I may not have the answers, but I think the division election should have the answers. And, or at least have a response to how would they handle a problem like this. I know there were quite a few people in my own district who were just real angry the next day. Real angry.
Thank you, Representative Phillips. You have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Phillips, I know you say that you had no pride of authorship. I was just going to make a suggestion or two within the wording. One problem that I would probably see is that word, well, really line 11, extend the hours of voting on election day. Mm-hmm. The situation we had in the valley and in Anchorage is that the power really didn't come on until early in the morning the next day.
Right.
So that in itself would constitute some problems there, possibly. Another question I had, Mr. Chairman, if I may proceed just a little bit, is I do remember that after 8 o'clock, or within an hour thereafter, even though the disaster that we had with the power outage, the television station started to report election results. Would it be then your intent that also no election results could be published until after such time that all people who were entitled to vote had an opportunity to vote under this piece of legislation? Or?
Well, I haven't thought of that possibility, but off the cuff, I would just be fair to everybody else. I'd go along with what you're saying, to delay the results until everybody's gone in and voted. If we find a mechanism to get these people back on and not disenfranchise them. Chairman, I also want to add that I did contact the division election with a letter asking for suggestions, and I didn't get anything back on it, so that's why I pursued this bill. This was before the current administration took over, so this is no reflection on the lieutenant government and Alpine staff right now. I'm saying I did it before they took over in December 6th.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just thinking to myself here that if possibly there's an exception made, and a power outage maybe will affect the larger area. But I can think of one precinct, and I'm sure that there are countless others. The Ventassa precinct, there's no electricity, but there's a lot of times where the traveling of 30 miles where we've had rain, sleet, things of that nature, where the road conditions are such. So if you had one precinct that couldn't, you had one small precinct that couldn't get the vote, or they felt that they were justified, then it could hold up the whole election process until that precinct, the weather conditions changed or whatever, before the people felt as though they had their opportunity to get the vote. So I can see some real problems in trying to address this whole thing and making one exception and not another.
Yeah, in talking with the Lieutenant Governor's office, I see this problem coming up. It seems to me that was something to address. Suppose we had the great earthquake happened this past November, and all South Bend was moved. Have something to cover situations like that. I wouldn't call it exactly a complete election process where you have almost 80% of the population not voting, but you have the natural. I don't have the answers to what I'm saying, but I am do want to do this, I'm willing to work with the city and the county government office, come up with some mechanism to cover major taxes.
Thank you.
One more question, if I may. Do you know of any other state that has such legislation?
Is that closing your testimony?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Hello. Senator Governor McAlpine, if you care to...
Very minor, director of elections, will testify.
Fine, thank you. I believe she has some handouts. I wonder if we could...
I'm Mary Lou Miners, and I'm the new director of elections of the state of Alaska.
Thank you.
I have a memorandum prepared by the Attorney General's office. I also have some information concerning polling hours for all general elections throughout the 5th state, and I also have that brief one of these.
Thank you.
For your edification.
Pardon me, I didn't have them all together in one stack.
Could you proceed with your testimony, please?
Certainly. The Director of Elections is required under Section 15.15.070 to give the full public notice of the election no less than 10 days before the election. And the printed notice shall include, but not be limited to, the date of the election, the hours between which the polling places will be open, the offices to which the candidates are nominated or elected, and the subject of the propositions and questions to be voted upon. As you'll notice in our research, it shows that no other state may hold elections without prior notice given as to the information, the time of the polls being opened. Kansas is, if you'll look down there, it says on that second small handout, which is 2 pages. It says that the hours may be changed by the election authority, but the polls must be kept open at least 12 consecutive hours between the hours of 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. or 8 p.m. In checking the statute of the election for the state of Kansas election laws, prior notice must be given well in advance before they can change those times, and they still must remain open for the 12 consecutive hours. Now they can change them from 6 to 6 or 7 to 7 or however they see fit, but they must notify ahead of time. The Department of Law memo that was prepared by the election indicates that despite the power failure, that the elections were run smoothly and the full fulfill the turnout expectations in each district and precinct. We also know that anyone that is in line at 8 o'clock may vote. No one may join the line after 8 o'clock. We compared also the turnout in District 15 between the primary election and the general election. And in the primary, 51.8% turned out. And in the general, 68.2% turnout. So with the exclusion of two precincts in District 15, the turnout was over 75.7%. And those two precincts were 182 and 183. Yes, they're air bases. And in the primary election, their turnout was 32.1%, 30.6%. In a general, they even had a higher percentage of 45.4 and 39.2%. I would conclude in saying that the method proposed in HB 80 for determining that voters have been prevented from attending the polls is inexact and would leave the director of elections and the lieutenant governor open to charges of fraud. And despite some inconvenience, the voters are willing and able to cast their ballots in record numbers under very extreme circumstances throughout the state.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee?
Excuse me, a fiscal note that there would be really no appreciable fiscal impact if this bill should pass.
Thank you. Other questions?
Representative Larson. I guess just a point of information. I think Representative Phillips did point out that in case of a major natural disaster like the earthquake, that happened at 8 a.m. in the morning, do we have any provisions under present law that could provide then that the election would be held at a different time? Or?
We don't have any provisions in the present law, Representative Larson. But in thinking over what Representative Phillips said, we could make general public announcements that those persons involved would perhaps have to go recast a question or challenge ballot in a different precinct. And that would be the only thing that would readily come to my mind at this time. That would be my only solution.
Thank you.
Representative Miller?
Ma'am, please, through the chair. Thank you. Representative Miller.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to observe too that in the case of a massive earthquake like 1964, the last thing in the world people are going to be interested in is voting. I mean, that's going to be the least thing on the mind. So if we extended it 48 hours, it wouldn't make any difference. Because that's just, you know, health, security, food, all the real basics here that figure out everybody's mind. So although it makes for an interesting problem, I don't think it's, in real life, I don't think it represents anything. Because that's, voting becomes second, valuable as it is, it becomes second place, I think, in a case like that.
Thank you, Representative Miller. There are no further questions. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, sir.
Lieutenant Governor Alpine, are there any statements that you would care to make?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as was indicated by Mrs. Miners,
Excuse me, sir, for the record.
State my name, certainly. Stephen McAlpine, Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you.
Thank you. As Mrs. Miners indicated, the question that concerns us deeply with respect to HB 80 is the question that could be raised, or the appearances that could be raised by passage of a bill such as this. The bill indicates that the director, with the concurrence of the lieutenant governor, has the authority to extend the hours for voting on election day if the director determines that a natural disaster or other exigency has prevented a substantial number of qualified voters from voting, and then goes on to define what a substantial number, and that can be found only if the director indicates by statistics or other means an actual decrease in the number of qualified voters voting. I would indicate to the committee that we are very probably going to have that circumstance, the empirical evidence that is occurring in the very next election, in that Alaska had an extremely high voter turnout. So the evidence will be readily available in the next election, one could logically assume, unless we have issues of the same magnitude that we had in this election, we can anticipate a lower statistical voter turnout. The consequence is that all we need then is a natural disaster or other exigency, and that is any matter requiring immediate attention, if my vocabulary is up to snuff. The consequence then, taken to the next step, is at every turn, the director of elections and the lieutenant governor acting in concert are going to be brought under scrutiny as to the decision that was made. Is a snowstorm in Valdez a natural disaster or other exigency? Certainly, that's a common occurrence on November 2nd. It's not that infrequent. Is a traffic jam coming out of Anchorage another exigency? You'll note from the Attorney General's memorandum that one of the big complaints noted by voters was that they weren't able to get to the polling place because of traffic jams. Now, we know that traffic lights in the Anchorage area were out at that time. Would that particular consequence result in the lieutenant governor and the director conferring and declaring that certain polling places should be kept open? Additional scrutiny is going to be provided to those precincts where the election polls are held open. Are they being held open in fact because of another exigency, or are they being held open because an elected official having access to scientific polls has concluded that his or her office may be threatened by not keeping those particular polling places open at a later time? I think the American public, and probably even more so the Alaskan public, demand almost a sanctity with respect to elections. And I think that demand is rightfully undertaken. Elections in Alaska have been open to severe questioning, severe criticism over the last several years. And what we have done in the past about 8 years is tried to remove the elections process from discretionary moves or decisions, and actually through the enactment of statute provide better guidelines for the director of elections and alleviate more and more the responsibility of elected officials in their involvement with the elections process. I don't think that the question of whether or not individuals were denied access to the polls is ever going to be one that can be answered satisfactorily in the minds of all citizens of the state. The Attorney General's memorandum indicates that voters were actually in a better mood when they came to the polls, recognizing the circumstances, that alternative lighting was provided to the best of their ability, not having anticipated the power blackout. And I think that really is the essence of what we should be focusing on. Within the division, try to anticipate the types of things that will interfere with elections and address the questions along those lines. Certainly, we can require, as a matter of division policy, that alternative lighting be available at every polling place. We're never going to resolve the problems having to do with traffic jams, having to do with weather. We can take it up to the logical conclusion that was raised by Representative Larson, and that is, what happens in a major natural disaster? Now, I would suggest that if it were one of the consequences of the Great Alaskan Earthquake, that probably martial law is going to be declared for not only voting purposes, but looting and preservation of life and property. As Representative Miller indicated, under circumstances such as those, I don't think anyone is going to fault the governor. I would emphasize that our purpose here is not to subvert the underlying rationale for HB 80. Our purpose is to ensure that the discretionary type decisions that are placed with the division do not open the division to criticism absent the fault of those involved. And I think that what this would do is open the door for that type of reaction. Again, to reiterate what Mrs. Miners previously testified to, no state in the United States has any provision which allows a director of elections, a secretary of state, or a lieutenant governor to change the hours that polling places are open. Many states have varying approaches to the situation. Some allow the closure of polls early,
In most instances, that involves the full complement of registered voters having cast their ballot. But no state allows the discretionary action of an elections official to keep the polls open for a later period of time. There's no question that there was confusion that was brought about, not as a result of action by the division in the last election, but rather by anticipatory speculation on the part of the press. In some media, it was announced that the polls would probably be kept open later. That was not done through any type of press release done through the division. I queried Patty Ann Pauley about that, and she said that absolutely no media release was made until after such time that she and the Attorney General concluded that the law was very specific. The polls were open from 8 to 8. And when that had been concluded, and it was done so in a fairly short period of time, the media was all notified that the polls would be closed at 8 o'clock. And so the press releases that went out over the radio and television media went out without any concurrence of the department, and we can only speculate as to the level of journalism involved there. The other things I see as being a difficulty with this is that we can at this time anticipate an absolute announcement that the polls will be open from 8 to 8 and that voters should make plans to attend the polls and perhaps remind them of the circumstances. But if we open this window, we're going to allow for further speculation on the part of the voters. I think that if everyone knows that it is their right or responsibility to cast their ballot at that time, it's more easily accomplished for a private citizen to adjust their affairs than it is for the entire state structure to readjust. If it's the will of the body to approach it from another situation, perhaps opening the polls 2 hours earlier to allow those individuals who would care to vote prior to their going to work, we could open the polls at 6 o'clock. I would only indicate for the record that this has been tested in Juneau precincts, I believe, and the testing indicated that very few voters took advantage of that situation, and in the past it was felt that that was not a good approach.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. I might, if the bill has done nothing more than to bring it to the attention of the Lieutenant Governors and the Direction of Elections Office to serve its purpose, and I would anticipate that the board or the committee would anticipate those agencies looking into this particular problem and come up in their wisdom with the best answer that can be obtained for our election system. And I'm sure you'll be addressing that. Would I be remiss, or would I be missing my goal with that?
What we lack in humility, Mr. Chairman, we make up for in wisdom. We'll be
thank you. One other comment I may make that I noted in one of this report here, it rather interested me that states, while voters generally were inconvenienced by traffic congestion, and in some cases insufficient light, board members indicated that the atmosphere, as you so stated, was a little more jovial, and the voters were more cooperative as a result of this power outage. Well, any time that government can make the people smile and be happy and get along, I think this was an excellent thing that happened, and maybe we should have more of it. So if there's no further questions, any questions for the Lieutenant Governor? If not, sir, thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. My intention is to, I had no intention of passing this bill out of committee today. And are there any other comments any of the board members or any of the committee members would like to make? If not, I'll proceed to the next bill in front of us. Thank you again for attending.
I apologize for my...
No problem, ma'am. Thank you.
Protocol.
Thank you. The next bill will be House Bill 74, an appropriation to the city of Nanana for rehabilitation of the Tanana River Dock and waterfront facilities and providing for an effective date. I don't have my list of people who will testify. Is there anyone for this particular bill, Carol? There is none. Representative Schultz is the sponsor of it. Representative Schultz, would you care to give any testimony to this?
Yes.
Would you mind taking the stand, please?
May I like to have them back. The city of Nenana is very conservative, and they don't have many sheets.
By the way, let the record show that Representative Furness has joined us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for my tardiness.
I understand. The big house?
The big house.
To be given a number? Representative Furness states that he was called to the big house upstairs in heaven, evidently, for a meeting.
Very good.
Representative Schultz.
May I give my testimony from there?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry for the interruption. Go ahead.
Okay. House Bill 74 is relating to the rehabilitation of the dock facility in Nenana. The waterfront facilities in Nenana were constructed by the Alaska Railroad in 1937 to serve the traffic to the villages along the Tanana and Yukon Rivers. Today, the facility serves the dozens of villages, shipping out fuel oil, foodstuffs, building materials, and all sorts of other goods. The elements have taken their toll over the years since 1937 on the wood piling, and there's many of the piling and what have you that are rotting at this point in time and falling in the river. Additionally, the river has eroded the bank in the area of the proposed project back as far as 200 feet from the proposed bulkhead, and this was primarily happened, the major part of this erosion happened in the 1960s. The city studied the possibility of having the existing steel sheet piling portion of the bulkhead expanded in 1981, and permitting was completed in 1982. The study calls for a 1,000-foot extension, driven and anchored in backfield with 60,000 cubic feet of fill at the level of the Durham bulkhead. The city originally came to the 12th legislature for funding this project. Those of you that were here at that time may have remembered it. It was put on, however, and went through on a huge bonding bill at the end of the session, and then Governor Hammond vetoed that. I apologize for Steve Bainbridge from Nenana was going to come in and testify. I'm hoping that this would move into transportation where he could come in and testify at a later date. And there was a mix-up at the last time when they were down here due to an error on my part. So anyway, I wish that he were here to testify and maybe give you some more information, but that's all the specific information I have at this time.
Thank you. I will note that for the edification of the committee members, there is no fiscal note from the Department of Administration on it. Yet it is an appropriation, however. So I would just leave it at that. Are there questions for the sponsor on the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of questions and clarification. I've had a chance to visit the man, and I can certainly appreciate the efforts on this front. That facility is a revenue-generating facility, isn't it? How is that handled as far as...
It's a city-owned dock facility. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Does the city in turn charge a fee or tariff or whatever?
No.
Thank you.
No. For utilization.
For utilization.
No, it's primarily a loading dock, loading ramp for the barges and things of that nature for transporting the fuels and the food and what have you down the river.
I know that Coghill, for example, has a large storage area. Somewhere has a storage area. Are the revenues generated from the storage on the docks there?
Okay, and to my knowledge, I don't believe that there are any storage facilities on the dock itself. you know, now he's got fuel tanks and things along there, but that is on private land, I believe.
So what you're saying, that the city does not have revenues as a contributory factor to the repair of the docks here?
Right. The revenue that the city receives off of the dock facility itself would be due to the amount of fuel, groceries, and everything, and the transportation and the important link between that and the Bering Sea.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schultz, will this request appear on the capital budget, or will this be entirely separate from any other budget procedure?
Yes. There's a request that's going into Governor Sheffield at this time, signed by Senator Sackett, Senator Moss, and myself, are requesting that it be put into the governor's budget. Is that what you're speaking to? Yes.
Doug Larson, is that all right now?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Senator.
go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does the city of Nenana have any alternate designs if they can't get this money, or all the money they're asking for, or what are they going to do if they don't get any money?
Well, it's been up since 1937. They've been putting money into it, and it's a very unsafe facility right now, like I say, with the rotted piling and things, where they're loading the barges and things with fuel. It is becoming, they have put money into it themselves, and they just don't have the kind of money that we're talking about to make it a safe dock facility.
Thank you, Representative Miller.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to suggest that this one was budget. There's no question it's worthwhile. I suggest we speed along its way so we can get the finance, and therefore it's going to be in the battle of another project. It's a worthwhile project. We put it in last year in the bond package.
Thank you, Representative Miller. It is my intention to move this to the next committee of referral, Representative Furness.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, with that in mind, I would move that the committee support passage of this legislation with the individual recommendation.
You would move it out of committee?
We would move it out of committee.
To the next committee referral.
Right, Mr. Chairman, which is transportation.
Are there objections? The motion? If not, the motion is passed. The next committee referral is the Finance Committee, and we will accomplish that as soon as we sign off. Oh. Is there anything further?
Mr. Chairman, I might note the...
I'm sorry, transportation.
The informal protocol has been existing for many years, and you'll know it's substantiated that if we scratch each other's backs, of course, this representative voted for $1 million appropriation for my town the other day. This is $2.5 million, so I'd like to note that he still owes me $1.5 million, but...
I'm glad you brought that up.
Mr. Larson,
good luck in
$2.5 million yet to go.
Good luck in getting it. Is there anything further to come before the committee? If not, we are adjourned. Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I do apologize.
Oh, that's all right.
No, see, if I may have those back,
I want that one of them.